Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk on this dreary gray January 16th morning. And wasn't it beautiful yesterday? It just had this gentle snow all day. I hate starting out this with the weather report, but I think I'm becoming my parents and my grandparents. That's how we always start phone calls. What's the weather up there? What's the weather down there? So that's part of being a farmer, I think. So let's see. We have got some gun shows today. We actually do. None very close. We have the Houghton Lake Gun Show up in Houghton Lake, Michigan at the Northern Center. And this one I looked up because it's actually, they call it a Michigan one, but it's actually in Montpelier, Ohio, which is, I want to say, just south of the border. Wouldn't you know, we'd have to go to Ohio to go to a close gun show. But it's about directly south of Hillsdale or Jerome, Michigan. So I know Jerome because that's where a lot of us take our deer to be processed. So I'm thinking about maybe going to that. I'll have to see. So let's see. Ohio's got the Florence Gun Show. Now that one's actually in Florence, Kentucky, which I love driving into Florence, Kentucky. Have you guys ever seen the water tower down there when you drive through on 75 into Florence, Kentucky? It says Florence, y'all. I think that just makes me laugh every time I see it. Let's see. The Cuyahoga County Fairgrounds in Berea, Ohio has the Cleveland Berea Gun Show, Mansfield Gun Show in Mansfield, Ohio, and the Cincinnati Gun Show in Sharonville. Missouri's got a couple. The Fayetteville, Arkansas. Gosh, everybody's doing the ones on the borders. I guess they're expanding a little bit. Let's see. They canceled the Bridgeton Gun Show and the RK Gun Show in the Ozark Empire Fairgrounds of Springfield, Missouri's up. So New York has none. Sorry, Mike. At any rate, none that I could find in Michigan this week. CPLs were standing still at 703,390 with 13,000 pending. So that's actually, like I said last week, down 10,000 in the pending, or 9,500 in the pending. So that's pretty good. We'll see. I'm going to do a little experiment this week. I got my renewal letter in December for my CPL. So I didn't want to let it get caught up in holidays and stuff as I'm counting time. And actually, Monday is Martin Luther King Day, and a lot of the state and local government offices are shut down. So I am going to, on Tuesday, submit my CPL application for renewal online. I got the letter, gives me the code and all that kind of stuff to do. And so I'm going to do that. And then I'm going to start the clock and see how long it takes to happen. I know some of you have had great experiences, like 3 days, but that was pre-COVID-19. So we'll see. This will be a pretty good test now. Let's see. I got an interesting email. It actually was from 2 weeks ago, and I didn't get to it until this week. I responded to him this morning, and this is from listener Joseph. And I want to say this is exactly why when we say that Trigger Talk is gun talk for the experienced and beginning shooters, because we have people of all experience levels that listen. And actually, we have people of all ages. We have I want to just say, especially if you take right now where we have 8.7 million new first-time gun owners in the last 9-10 months, I guess it's 10 or 11 months, that a lot of people probably have these questions. So here is from listener Joseph. My wife and I recently got our CPL, and we are interested in purchasing a firearm. We are both in our 60s. What do you recommend? Also, what was that website to purchase new ammunition? I enjoy listening to your show. You provide a wealth of information. My son and his wife are first-time buyers as well, and he will be contacting you for the website for information. So first of all, for listener Joseph and for his son, if he's listening, ammobuy.com, ammobuy.com. It's kind of a consolidation, a search website where you can put in, and it always has some ammo. It has, you know, everything that's even popular. Now, granted, the prices may be a little higher right now because of panic buying, because of survivalist buying, because of all sorts of reasons. Actually, partly because there's 8.7 million new firearm owners out there. And so they all are out buying 9mm, 45, 22. A lot of people are buying a lot of things out there. So let's see. I want to say if you go to ammobuy.com, what you'll do is it'll say, what do you want? Rifle, shotgun, pistol, ammunition, what caliber? And then when you click it, it'll give you a page or two of all these places around the country. And it gives you, it updates minutely. I want to say it'll say 6 minutes ago, it checked and they still had 57 boxes at Fin, Feather, and Fur or something like that. So that's a pretty good, useful website out there. Now, to answer his question about what do I think I should, you know, he should get? Well, I want to say, and before I get into specifics, the first thing you have to ask is, what do you want to do with it? Now, he's recently got their CPLs and are interested in purchasing a firearm. So I've got to say, it would appear that what he's looking for is a carry gun, right? But and probably now both the husband and wife took the training, but we can't assume that they intend to carry, because sometimes people take the training so that they get the training and have a better understanding of the legal requirements, what they can and can't do, things like that. But then they may be deciding to get a gun that is just a home gun. And I always say this, not really a nightstand gun, because it's okay to put it in the nightstand at night, but you shouldn't leave it in the nightstand during the day, okay? And that is true. And you might go, well, gee, I'm in my 60s, so I don't have any little kids running around. Well, you do have, or you may have grandkids that come around. But also remember this, that if you're gone and somebody breaks into your home, the first place they're going to look is in the nightstand, okay? So you want to be able to have it as a secure gun. Now, you can have, like one of those Hornady rapid safes or something like that that bolts to the nightstand and is absolutely secure, so that somebody, unless they walk out of the house carrying a 100-pound nightstand, they're not going to get the safe, okay? But you don't want to just have a nightstand gun just in the nightstand, because that's you're buying guns for the bad guys. Now, granted, you may never get a break-in. I've never had a break-in, but I don't trust that. I have to have mine in secure location. So at any rate, so let's say, are you going to get one as a nightstand gun? Because if you do, that may be different than what you would get as a CPL. That's why I tell people a lot of times that when they go, what should I get as a gun? Well, I'll often say your first gun ought to be a blah, blah, blah. And the reason is because as you may start out with a home gun, and then which might be a little larger. A full-size gun is easier to aim and hold than one of these smaller CPL-sized guns, okay? And they're easier to control and get back on target. They have less recoil. Well, how can that be, Dick, if you're just shooting? Well, because they're heavier, okay? So what happens is the weight, the mass of the gun helps soak up some of that recoil, okay? So at any rate, you may get, let's say, and this is where I'll get a little specific, a lot of instructors think that the best handgun, if somebody's buying one, is a 9mm semi-automatic, a mid-sized one. Now, mid-sized being versus full-sized, and full-sized is more like, I'll give you some numbers. A Glock 19, and I mean a Glock 17 would be a full-size Glock. Springfield's XD is a full-sized one. Now, if you get a XD compact with a 4-inch barrel, then you're talking what I'm talking about here. A mid-sized, maybe 4-inch barrel, 4.1-inch barrel, something like that, 9mm semi-automatic. Okay, so like a Glock 19, a Springfield XD compact, a Smith & Wesson M&P compact. Then you have to think about a couple other things. You need to think about, well, do I want a single stack or a double stack? You know, a staggered magazine. You go, well, what's the difference with that? Well, what the difference with that is the thickness of the grip. Because you can have a magazine that has the rounds all lined up straight, and that's pretty narrow. But if it's got them staggered and it carries like a Glock 19 has 15 rounds in it, there's a couple things to think about with that. That it's heavier, which is can be good because of the recoil absorption, but it also is heavier. So, and the grips are wider. So you think about who's going to use it and what are you going to use it for? If it's just in the nightstand and or on the nightstand, say you get it out at night, or if you've got a, there's some neat bedtime holsters that actually mount on the side of the bedboard, and you've got it right down at the side right there. You know, you may have a larger gun for your house gun, but then a smaller gun for carrying, because concealment means concealed, and if you want it to be under a coat, under a shirt, under jackets, under whatever, then it's easier to conceal a slightly smaller gun. The other thing to think about is that maybe you don't want a pistol at all. Okay, now a lot of people tend to think that a modern sporting rifle, an AR-15, makes an outstanding home defense gun. And it can in the hands of the right person, okay? But the other thing that people, I want to say sometimes people talk about is a home defense shotgun. And I had another note this week from somebody who said, Dick, what do you think of this new blah, 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 okay? And it's a Turkish-built AR-15-style 12-gauge shotgun that has a 5-round detachable mag on it. And it's got a very... I want to say it looks like a standard AR-15, but it's got a very unique, kind of clumsy-looking gas system in it. And I said, you know, you're really better off with, instead of a exotic or fancy AR-15-style 12-gauge, you're probably better off with a good old-fashioned pump, okay, like a... I want to say, and there's a couple of sizes with that. You can get a Remington 870 that looks like a normal gun. Maybe it's a little shorter, has a longer magazine tube, holds 6 or so rounds, and it's not something that, like, if you have a problem with that Turkish gun 3 years from now or 10 years from now, where are you going to get it fixed? That company may be long gone, and nobody has any similar style gas system on it, so parts aren't readily available. But a Remington 870, they've been making for 70 years, okay? And so they've got lots of them around and lots of parts available. And they actually make a neat one now for home defense that is very short. It's called a VTAC 14. It's got a little kind of a pistol grip, not really a pistol grip, but it looks like, I always say it looks like a femur. I mean, it comes out like a bone with a knob on the end, okay? Well, Mossberg makes one of those as well. Mossberg makes a 590A1 or a 590 Shockwave, same kind of thing. And that's got a shorter barrel and it's got a short stock on it, and it's an outstanding home defense gun. Now, you're going to have to practice with it a bit because the 12 gauge, and especially if you're not holding it with your shoulder, you're holding it down at mid-level height. You're gonna have to get used to the recoil and stuff. But that might be your best bet as a home defense gun or a backup home defense gun. But to go back to listener Joseph's question, I sent him a note. I gave him a list of a couple. I said, you need to think about if you want a mid-size, and I gave him, I think, an outstanding mid-sized gun these days, especially now. He mentions, and this is no judgmental thing here, we're both in our 60s. So what happens is, people that, as you age, you can get ailments with your hands, okay? Arthritis or tendonitis or other things like that that cause your hands to not work as well. And so you may have difficulty racking the slide. So a Smith & Wesson EZ is reported to have 50% less effort to rack the slide. So I'm sure there's going to be other companies that come out with similar kind of things. Now, you could say, well, maybe a revolver's for them. And it could be. But again, a revolver can also take more trigger strength on your finger. And again, if you've got any ailments with your hands, you're better off with the semi-automatic. Okay? So I gave them a list of a couple. I also mentioned another step. If you're looking, so let's say I told them like the Springfield XD Compact, the SIG P320, the Glock 19, you know, some others in that area. But I said, you know, if you want to go for a single stack, which has a thinner grip and is suitable for carrying, then you're looking at something like the SIG P365, the Glock 43. I think a great combination for carry is the Springfield Hellcat, which is the one that holds 12 rounds, and it's got a kind of it's a bit of a stagger, but it's not that fat of a grip. I really like it. I actually was breaking one in for Pastor Rick one time, and I just love that gun. So. So at any rate, that's my comments to listener Joe and Joseph. And Joseph, you're welcome to call in if you're listening, or anybody else who's got comments on first guns. So let's see. I was also looking. This is interesting. This week we have a lot of stuff going on politics-wise, especially when it comes to websites and people shutting down and blocking accounts and big tech shutting off things like Parler and other websites where all those evil white supremacists hang out and think about overthrowing the U.S., you know? So they're all thinking they're doing a public service by cutting things down. Well, they also did things. They shut down a very popular website called AR15.com. Now, it's supposedly back up and running. But and I know it is because I checked this morning. But I want to say there is some overreaches going out there with, you know, matter of fact, when I looked up, interestingly enough, I looked up that gun show at Montpelier, Ohio, and when I saw it, it said, you know, look up the gun show on Facebook, and I clicked on it, and it went and said, we cannot find your page. I thought, oh, geez. So I do think it's interesting. I'd like to know if you're having difficulty with anything like that, in particular gun show gun websites. I think some of the ones like Rimfire Central and other ones are kind of tame and they don't go after them, or they're under the radar. But we need to watch for that. Let's see. And speaking of things to watch for, I think this is interesting. If you didn't know this, The NRA got sued last year by New York for claiming that, and by the way, I think they're probably right, that there was some misappropriations of funds by Wayne LaPierre and some things going on like that. And people thought, well, why are you even hanging out in, you know, I don't even know why all these gun companies hang out on the East Coast up there. They all are in Connecticut and Massachusetts and Maryland and stuff like that. And they're places where they don't want you. Okay. Well, the NRA filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Now, they're saying, well, we're not going broke. We're just, well, what they're doing is they're obviously, it's probably a legal maneuver to limit their liability in the lawsuits from New York. But they are shutting down their operations in New York and reincorporating in Texas. Okay. Well, hallelujah. Okay. Texas, Alabama, North Carolina, someplace like that where they actually want gun companies, okay? So, and gun associations and things like that. So we'll have to watch this. I think, I'm hoping, and I hate this, that when they show the pictures and the stories, they always show a picture of Wayne LaPierre. And I thought, you know, just like so many of these 80-year-old politicians that, now this guy is not 80, but the point is your time is done, Wayne, okay? Take your little retirement and get the heck out of there, and let's let some people who better represent the NRA nowadays in there, people who aren't looking for $10,000 suits and having company corporate planes fly their family around the country and stuff like that. Let's spend the money on training, on safety programs, and on fighting the good battle, not on yourself. So that's my take on the NRA stories. So I'm happy to hear that from anybody. Let's see, what else have we got here? There they go, big picture NRA, Wayne LaPierre, the face of the NRA. Now, another thing is, I saw a gear review for yet another Sig Sauer Romeo 5 XDR red dot sight. Sig Sauer's going all out on some of these medium-priced red dots to put on your firearms. They're low profile, they're small, they're outstanding values, and they're backed up by an outstanding company. So I want to say they just came out with this Romeo 5 XDR series. And again, they put it through the ringer. They did a lot of waterproof tests. And gosh, the one they show the picture of, they got all beat up. It's got a couple different, it's got a circle dot and just a dot, dot reticle that you can choose from. It is pretty neat. And I want to say, I see one of these. Matter of fact, I remember the plain old Romeo 5 that they had. They had it at Cabela's for like $129 in December. That was outstanding, okay? And this one here, though, is a little more. It lists for $259, but they're going for about $230 retail. So, again, outstanding. It uses regular batteries like AAAs. It has an automatic on feature that when you lift it up, it starts. It's just outstanding. So at any rate, that's kind of fun. Let's see. I've got a fun story about a Chicago carjacker, but I'm going to hold that for the next hour or the next half hour. This is Dick Koepke, and I'm at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600, which is 92.7 FM and 1600 AM. And I would like to hear from you guys today. I haven't heard if you got anything for Christmas. I'd like to talk to you about hand loading, because I have been getting back into it this week, and I've got to tell you some things I found. So it's interesting. Also, there's an interesting story about Colt firearms coming up. So a couple of things in the next hour. You know, I don't want to sound like the news. Breaking story about Colt firearms. News at 11. No, no, we don't do that. But we do have to take breaks. So Let's see, what else did I want to talk about? A movie, a new movie review called Flinch. Has anybody seen it? Let's talk about that in a little bit. This is Dick Cupkey at Trigger Talk Radio. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Wham! Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Cupkey. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And I was just reading ahead in my notes. There's so many fun things to talk about. But this one made me laugh. This could be the joke of the day, but there's a Chicago carjacker. And by the way, carjackings are up like 400% in Chicago. Their murders are up 100%. You know, that whole gun control thing over there apparently is not working that well. And so at any rate, there was a Chicago carjacker who trying to hijack a tow truck. And you know, I don't know how he picked the tow truck, but of interest, the guy, it's not just not a normal tow truck. It was a flatbed, a rollback, they call it. And so at any rate, the guy tries to hijack the tow truck driver. And then, as probably many tow truck drivers are, the owner pulled a gun on the hijacker, okay, the carjacker. And the guy, his name's Elliot Scott, okay, he carjacked a tow truck in Chicago. This was just this last Tuesday. And the tow truck driver pulled a gun on it. Well, Mr. Scott felt he was terribly wronged. Hey, you can't do that. And he called 911 to have the police arrest the tow truck driver for pointing a firearm at him. I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up. Now, the guy is not a Rhodes Scholar, okay? Not any kind of a scholar. And you can't believe it. I mean, it's only in Chicago would the carjacker call 911 when the owner of the vehicle actually pulls a firearm on him. It just made me laugh. So anyway, I guess you had to be there. But let's see. This was the interesting story about Colt. And Colt has gone through some interesting times. Most recently, though, it's brought out its Cobra guns, its snake guns again. And it's, people are really enjoying the fact that Colt listened after so long, decided to bring out their revolvers again. Well, but also at the same time, Colt Defense, which is, an offshoot of the company, though, was having some monetary issues. Well, apparently, CZ, Seska Zebravaka, which is, CZ has been a gun maker for like 80 years, okay? They actually made guns, I want to say, actually 83 years is what they've made. They operate and sell guns in 98 countries. They have 1,450 employees, 83 years of experience, and they're currently selling 1,500 guns a day, 1,577 guns a day. Well, they make very good firearms. Many of you know that their bolt-action rifles are outstanding, okay? And I have a CZ VZ-24, which is a bolt-action 8mm Mauser from World War II. Okay, they've been making guns for a long time. I also have a CZ-52, which is a 7.62 Tokarov semi-automatic. I mean, some really fun guns. And I got to say, well, I hate to think of Colt being sold, and especially to a foreign company. But, of course, things are awful global these days. So I want to say, here we here we are with a good opportunity of a well-funded, decent gun company, not one of these investment firms that's just looking to buy it and pick it apart and run off with any money that they can manage to get out of it. I think it might be a good thing. So we'll have to watch this carefully. We've got Tom from Detroit on the phone about Savage Rifles. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Dick. You were talking a couple of weeks ago. You had a caller talking about he had a light strike on his Savage rifle and missed his buck because, misfired. And then next week you gave out the Wolf Springs. I think it's gunsprings.com. Yes. At any rate, I ordered a couple. I got a couple of Savage bolt guns, 110, and I put the springs in, and I put the factory put a 28-pound spring in there, and I was having a lot of trouble with that, and especially in real cold weather. Okay. I just wouldn't hit the primer hard enough. And so I put a 36-pound in the 30-06 and a 32 in the 223. I took them out and test fired them, and they're working good. I'll have to wait till it's real cold and try them with some military primers. I got some of those CCI makes that you can buy commercially, the hard military primers.
Right.
And I'm going to load up a few rounds with those in there and take it out on a cold day and leave it set in the trunk all night. And but I don't think I'll have any problem. The thing is if you want to do it yourself, I recommend what I had to do is I kind of took and I measured the whole striker spring assembly comes out of the bolt. And I took and I made a little blueprint. I measured everything, including I had to decock it, and I mapped it out what the protrusion was, how far the pin sticks out of the bolt face. And because last time I did it, it's got two adjustments it's like a threaded rod, and it's threaded on both ends. And what happened to me was I forgot how many turns I took, and I didn't, do the little notes. I took a few pictures and what have
you. Well,
I was going to say,
the best thing that I have ever come across from the standpoint of anything mechanical, and this includes taking apart lawnmowers or rototillers or whatever, is your darn old iPhone to take pictures of the assemblies. You know what I mean? But you went one step further and did a blueprint on it.
Oh yeah, you have to. It's pretty obvious if you look at it, to understand. There's a couple of lock nuts on there with a little kind of teeth on them that they have to be lined up correctly. And then not to count the 2 hours I spent crawling around on the floor looking for the it's a special lock washer that it flew off because the spring slipped.
Thing to talk about.
Put inside a bag or a plastic bag.
The whole idea of using a magnetic mat or something like that, because there's nothing worse. I always do this too, because there's nothing worse though when there's a spring that flies and then you hear tick, 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 and you know that like a little ball or something went somewhere and you've got to go find it,
I hate it when that happens.
I know. So do you consider it to be, now you're an experienced gun guy, so probably if somebody is just a normal shooter and they're worried about it, they should probably have a gunsmith do it in your estimation, because it took some skills that you've acquired over the years?
Definitely. Yeah, it's not an easy job. I said, I had to make a special tool to be able to compress that. Actually, all it was a piece of sheet metal with a 7/32 slot milled in it, so I could kind of compress the spring. I just, right. I don't, you might be, somebody might be able to do it with their fingers. I couldn't.
Yeah. Yep.
But, you
well,
know,
great.
And there again, everything, it has to be put back together. I got it, you know, within a couple of thousandths of, you know, that's basically the way I put it back together.
Yep. Yeah. So, so it, the other thing is now, you're going to probably be careful what you lube it with too, because actually the lubes these days are better than the lubes even from 10 years ago. But something that, I always think about with cold weather is that people who use heavier greases or heavier, oils in cold weather, it can slow down a firing pin. So what did you use to, lube it back up again?
I've just got a little bit of light machine oil in there, just basically Remington gun oil. And
like Rem oil?
I don't have a lot in there. I've got the 36-pound spring in there now, so I don't expect any problems. But yes, a lot of those old bolt rifles that you know people bought, they even had cosmoline inside the bolts.
Oh, I know. I've had a couple of the old surplus Mosin Nagants and SKSs that are like ultra packed in cosmoline. You spend weeks cleaning those things out.
Yeah, they can be. I've still got rifles that they're still seeping cosmoline out of the wood stocks or whatever they put linseed oil. It might be, but
yeah. Yeah. Well, great. Tom, thank you for the essentially bench report on following up on that. I appreciate it. And I forget which listener it was that mentioned it, but hopefully he heard it and he'll follow up with the gun springs, higher tension springs too. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye. Okay. We've got, Bruce from Plymouth, who's on the phone with a question about his Sig Sauer slide. Hi, Bruce. I haven't heard from you in a long time.
Hello. It's good to talk with you again. My problem, I can't have a SIG T380, and, you know, it's a smaller gun that I'm trying, and I'm having problem taking the slide off in order to do the cleaning. I just wonder if there's a tool that's available from somebody, or if somebody has a better idea in order to make it easier to remove the slide. Right now, it has a little button on the right-hand side. You push the button, and you pull out the slide stop. Meanwhile, you got to do them both at the same time, and the button is so small that I can't push it through. I hope I explained this.
You know, and I don't recall on a SIG, you said a P380, not a 320 or a 365, but a 380.
Yes, sir.
You know, I will look into that. Let me write that down and check, because I do not recall any tips on that. Or, you know, whether people use a certain tool or if one's made or if they've got a certain, you know, method that they use. I'll look that up. Okay, Bruce?
That would be perfect. And let me know. And one more question, if I can ask. Are the shooting ranges in the area, do they have a special way of treating people now coming in to do shooting as far as the COVID pandemic?
I want to say I know that, well, a couple of things. Sometimes if they're like a club or whatever, we change some things at our club. And about how people, you know, I want to say like spaces in between and how they can enter the range and stuff like that. I do know that like Ann Arbor Arms has quite a cleaning protocol. They also, of course, because their air handlers are outstanding, they do a great job of cleaning the air. And as I recall that that firing line also had some special protocols, but usually it has to do with disinfecting and, of course, social distancing being it. They may leave a lane open between them, or they, you know, and also require masks and stuff. So hopefully, now I know you're probably in the range. Maybe you'll end up getting a vaccine pretty quick and you'll be back on the range, right?
I will. I'm looking forward to it. Okay, my friend. Thank you very much, and I'll keep listening to see if anybody can come up with a method of removing the slide.
Let's see if there's any listeners that have any special tricks on that. Very good. Talk to you next week. Bruce. Yep. Bye-bye. Jay from Ann Arbor is on the phone with a question about pistol cleaning. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Dick. I have a quick question. I pulled out a PM9 from the back of my safe. It's been in storage a long time.
Okay.
It's only got about 6 rounds through it. And as I pulled it out, I was going to shoot it. I thought, well, let me take it apart first. And it's full of this brown, sticky goo, the magazine, the spring, everything. Somebody said, oh, use paint cleaner to clean it all up. But I'm not sure that's the best thing. What do you recommend?
Well, I want to say there's any good solvent. And you know what I have used? Now, a car, you've got synthetic grips on that, but you take them off, right? So you've got, you don't have to worry about the solvent dissolving a synthetic grip, right?
Well, actually, the frame is synthetic because it's a PM9 lightweight.
Oh, it's not a steel-framed one.
No, this is a very expensive gun.
Okay.
It's the PM series, so.
Well, then, matter of fact, I would say there are a couple of, I forget which one, Birchwood Casey makes a couple different kinds of solvent, but they make one specifically for synthetic grip guns, because what you don't want to do, and I've got to say, what did I was working on something. Oh, I know what it was. I was working on a windshield wiper motor on my old Lincoln, which was a vacuum actuated one. And I had this little like a block on there that I thought, oh, is that all gunked up? I'm going to clean that up. And I used some solvent and it started to melt it. I went, oh no. So what I would do though is, even if you buy the Birchwood Casey that's made for synthetic stocks, I would test it first on an area like in the magwell or inside the dust cover, you know, which is the lower part of the lower part of the receiver, to make sure that you don't have any disintegration or softening, because you know. You could maybe not even realize it at the time, but it might soften it slightly. So I don't know. That's a car PM9?
Yeah, but what I'm really interested in is like the steel magazine and the steel spring and the steel slides.
In those cases, any of the parts, like you said, on the slide upper or the magazine or something like that, you can use any of the solvents. I have used even things like Brake Clean, okay, because you're just trying to get it as clean as possible. I wouldn't worry about any of the steel finishes and things like that, because you're going to coat it with oil again, not the mags, okay? In the mags with the mag springs and stuff, you're just going to leave it super clean. But up in the slide and stuff, areas that are gunky up there, you can clean it with any good, and I would use an aerosol spray. And actually, if you're worried too, I would use, like I said, I've used Brake Clean, things like that. But then also, I use compressed air to spray it off. Do you have that available?
I do. That's a good idea.
Okay. So since you've got compressed air, I would blow it out with compressed air. But if you don't, the little cans of aerosol air, like you use for computers and stuff like that, are helpful as well. So, the main thing you would worry about on that gun would be any of the plastic parts. And I don't think it has any plastic pins or a plastic guide rod on it, does it?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Just be careful with the any of the plastic resin parts. And I would not use, like I said, I would not worry about it if you get the Birchwood Casey. I think it's called Blast Off or something like that, but it's made specifically for synthetic frames. But try it first, okay?
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. You know, that is. I did say there is one thing that I did melt one time, gun related, and I had a spare set, so it didn't matter. but I was cleaning a Ruger Mark II. Okay, well, that seems like a pretty straightforward thing. Now, my Ruger Mark IIs that I had both had Hoag target grips on them. So I had taken off the regular plastic grip that came with them. And they were just a hard plastic, a black hard plastic. And I was doing some cleaning on the gun, and I got a drip of solvent on the grip. And sure enough, it melted the grip, because I went to wipe it off, and with the toweling that I was using, it actually stuck to the grip. You know what I'm talking about? When something starts to melt, you get the fibers of a paper towel or cloth that stick in it. And I go, oh no! Well, I had another set that I could replace on it, but it you have to be careful, because some of these solvents that are long time ones that you may have used are not plastic friendly. And it's kind of like they apparently did not think that people would clean a gun and let the plastic grips touch it, or they never even considered it. They had wood grips. So, you know, hey, what are you doing with a gun with plastic grips anyway? That's a sissy gun. You know, that was the that was the take years and years ago when people didn't like polymer guns. Now all these guns are polymer. I mean, virtually any firearm, from a Glock to a Springfield to a SIG to any of these things, all have polymer parts and polymer grips. So you got to be careful with them. The other thing is that some of the older ones, like I mentioned that CZ 52 that I've got, it's got Bakelite grips. And if you remember what Bakelite is, remember they used to make cameras and radios and stuff out of Bakelite, and that was impervious to anything, but not so much the polymers later on, especially things in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. By the 90s, they started thinking about that, I think. But you got to be careful with it. So at any rate, let's see. We're running out of time here. I was talking, there's a movie. We'll talk about this next week, because by next week it will have come out for normal distribution. There's a movie called Flinch that is about just the run-of-the-mill gun range employee who happens to also be a professional hitman. I think they're trying to imply something there. Let's see. We got Dan on the phone with a comment about solvents. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Dick. How are you? Real quick, just wanted to mention that a good test for a solvent compatibility with a polymer piece of either a handle or grip or any part of the gun, dip the solvent in a Q-tip, and then just touch it to an inconspicuous place. And if the color, the black, transfers to the Q-tip, that means you're not compatible.
Very good idea. That is a great idea. And, you know, I was just thinking, while you mentioned that, even on like that mag that the last guy was talking about, the last listener, many of them, the end caps on the mags are polymer. So, yeah, you would have to be careful with that. And that's a great idea. A nice white Q-tip would show a bit of transfer. Excellent idea. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great week.
Okay, great. Listeners come through with the help here. I was reading about this movie called Flinch. They said it's actually fairly entertaining, but it's kind of an odd premise. And the guy's supposedly a professional hitman, but his gun handling skills are a little suspect. So anyway, if anybody sees the movie Flinch in the next week, let's talk about it next week. The other thing is, oh my goodness, what are you going to buy with your stimulus check? Now that it's going to be many thousands of dollars more than the $600, let's talk about that next week. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. I'll see you next week.